This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonsla, and watch with glittering eyes the whole world around you, because the greatest secrets are always hidden in the most unlikely places. Those who do not believe in magic will never find it. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Let Napa Auto Tech's Build-A-Tech program, you know, like Build-A-Bear, help you turn your general technician into a moneymaker for your shop. Make them a profitable member of your team. Go to napautotech.com for more details. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit picoauto.com, that's PICOauto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. I caught a YouTube short that really intrigued me. It was an author of motivation, or a motivational speaker who wrote a book. And at the time, I think he was in his early 20s when he wrote it. And he was coming home one day, and one of his neighbors had flagged him down. This neighbor was, I guess, into his 50s, maybe. He's telling him about he read his book, and it was life-changing. And this 50-something was a very successful businessman, and he was saying how all his life, and actually, you know what? I should back up just a little bit first. In telling the author or motivational speaker about the book and how it affected him, this 50-something neighbor said that it inspired him to quit his job. The motivational speaker turned to him and said, I don't know if you quite got what the book was about. The neighbor asked him to come sit with him on the porch, or I don't know, it doesn't really matter, to talk about it a little bit. And what it was, this neighbor, this 50-something, since he was a child, all he wanted to do was fix bicycles, repair bicycles. I didn't really seem like it was build them. And, you know, he ran it by his father and was scoffed at and was very much urged to get into corporate world and climb the corporate ladder and become quote unquote successful. And so that's what he did for the better part of, I think it was like 28 years, could have been 30. Doesn't really matter. It's a long time. He did quote unquote succeed, right? He did climb that ladder, but was never happy, never really enjoyed it. There's a certain contradiction that could be inferred from me talking like this, because I would be the first to tell all of my kids, don't necessarily follow your passion, follow the money. And a lot of times you can find the passion in making money and being able to afford to do what you'd like to do. And we end up in like a case-by-case discussion, right? Where it depends on what they're passionate about. If they're passionate about oil painting, what's the chances they could make a living doing that? Especially if it's like having their own studio and selling their paintings. Is it impossible? Absolutely not. Is it likely? I don't know. I don't think so. It's not as likely as being in one of the skilled service professions or skilled trades, if you will, or many other avenues. It doesn't have to be just strictly the skilled trades, but right now there's such a dire need for us that it's hard not to push people that way, urge them to look into that. And anyways, this gentleman who really had, I guess, followed that formula, right? Did something he did not much care for, made a really good living, and now he can afford to do what it is he really likes. This is the part of the story that I found very interesting and intriguing, is that the neighbor, opened up his garage to show all these bicycles from a varying degrees, like from the neighborhood kids to people sending him competition bicyclers. So I think there's, you know, mountain bike climbing or mountain biking and competition racing and whatnot, right? So he's got just a variety of these bikes, and he's showing this motivational speaker author just the different things he's doing to these bikes. And talking about the suspension systems and the drive systems and the gear selectors and transmissions, if you will. And the motivational speaker slash author thinks to himself, I have never seen a 50-something just become a child so quickly in my life. It didn't mean that derogatorily. It wasn't like you child, but it was that wonder, that passion, that excitement. I find that interesting because on one hand, I would tell you to follow your passion or follow the money. Sorry, don't follow your passion, follow the money. But on the other hand is if you do have that passion, how do you keep it? And if you're, you know, in management or own a shop, which I guess by default makes you in management, typically, I suppose there's some situations where that's not true. But the reality is, if you own it, you're probably a high-ranking manager. How do you help your people maintain their passion? And that becomes very intriguing to me. And I don't know. I guess I was thinking about the stuff I do. And unfortunately, I think I'm in a fairly unique situation where there's a lot of things I got to choose to do and lucked out that I had A, employers that allowed me to do it. B, I just think you cannot overlook my geographical location. And I don't mean Minnesota so much as the shop is located in a small town by most standards of 20,000 or so population. I guess there's some surrounding areas of smaller towns that you could argue bump up effective population a little bit. But I think the big thing is we're an hour drive away from any metropolitan area where there is large scale dealer support. And it kind of creates an opening, if you will, for a service provider to do those things. So I don't know that it's necessarily reasonable for so many shops to have as much equipment, diagnostic equipment, scan tools. And as I was going to talk about a little bit, the, you know, EEPROM, if you will, type tools, simply because there's little alternative. So that puts me in a very unique position to be able to do that. And since, you know, I kind of want to, and some of the stuff I hate to say I have the skill set for, but I suppose the reality is, and a lot of that stuff I do. And not just, I don't want to imply that it's like I'm so great. It's also a lot of effort, a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of money, going to training and all the things, right? Networking, building up a friends group or colleagues group or whatnot, where hopefully I can help them on certain things. And in turn, they help me. I mean, absolutely help. So I guess where I was heading with that, the whole buildup thing, is a lot of these things I get into with like the ADOS calibrations and the EEPROMing. And let's just say, let's go back to factory scan tools and lab scopes and the different accessories like current probes or pressure transducers and just like programming. A lot of it was to keep that passion, to keep that, I guess, excitement and childlike wonder. And I don't know, just keep my interest. I think if all I did was spin wrenches, which is something I don't think I've ever been all that good at, and even more so, fairly uninterested, disinterested or uninterested in, that even if I did all diag all the time, depending on the nature of the diagnostics, I think I get bored with that over time and it just start to get mundane. I don't know if it's ever possible for it to be completely mundane, honestly, considering some of the things that we run into. There is a certain level of excitement from time to time, or just it gets intriguing, right? Your interest goes way up. And then if it's a tough one, that rush of finally figuring it out, although sometimes that's very bittersweet. I don't know about you. Sometimes I do figure it out and then lament at how long it took me to figure it out or the path I took to figuring it out. And then I'm pretty sure I'm not nearly as good as some people think I am. Joke's on them. No, I think they know. I think that's a lot of the reason I get into that stuff. And so going back to like a management perspective, and I don't know, I almost hate saying the word culture. It's almost like communication, and not that it starts with the letter C, but just you just hear it so often, you start to almost get annoyed with it. You know, every freaking post, oh, my techs are doing this, and oh, my mechanical specialists are doing that, or they don't do this, and blah, blah, blah. And well, your shop culture, what's your shop culture like? Oh, you got to improve your communication. It's all about communication. And eventually you just get annoyed with it. That's just the reality of it, though, is that's what we're dealing with is shop culture. What's the environment like? And does it rob that passion? If you went to your technical specialist or your mechanical specialist and you asked them about their job or really what are they doing? You know, what are you working on? Almost like an old episode of This Old House, you know? Hey, Bob, what are you doing today? What do you got going on today? I guess we know like what the motivators can be, and that would definitely lead to it with, I guess one of the number one things I find to be a demotivator is setting me up to fail. And not for somebody that's never really worked flat rate, my setting up to fail is putting me in a position where I'm between a rock and a hard place to figure this car out or fix this car because I don't have the right tooling. I don't have the right information. I have got little to no training. What were the chances I was going to be able to do this efficiently and accurately? It'd be pretty harsh to be overly judgmental of myself when I've been set up to fail. And then it's hard to work up the effort, right? It's hard to just dial it up. Eventually you find yourself just not wanting to. It's like, how many sick days do I got left? How many vacation days do I got back left? Like, that's terrible. Or you're looking for another job and being usually greatly let down at how most other shops were not that much different. NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in the town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Auto Tech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Auto Tech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Auto Tech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling, while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles, and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Auto Tech Training. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. I guess from a payment standpoint, if you are on a production type of a pay plan where what you can produce dictates heavily what your paycheck looks like, being set up to fail is not having the right equipment, of course, but even just like layout or systems in place that allow you to be as productive as you really reasonably can. Where as much of the production levels. I want to say levels just because, you know, good and bad are as much in the technician's lap, or more so in the mechanical specialist, technical specialist lap as than the shops, because the shop has the systems in place. It has everything it needs to make you as productive as it possibly can. So really now the ball is in your court. And I think that's as good a system as anyone can have. It's just not the system most of us see. So that's a major demotivator when your checks aren't quite what they could be, or you're looking at, you know, a tiered system where you hit certain numbers and you get a bump, hit more other numbers and get another bump. There's no reasonable way for me to hit these bumps because a lack of a system, or just the culture, the environment is not such to allow anyone to do that unless they're gaming the system, which I've talked about extensively. Any intelligent human is going to start gaming a system to get the maximum result or benefit with the least amount of input. That's just the way it does. That's just the way it works. I mean, those are the most obvious. The other thing is to just, I think, emote or express the excitement for what you do as a leader. Are you showing up excited? We can't overlook, not, you know, when we get into subject of actual like dollars, I think that's a horrible reference. Do they make X amount of dollars per year, per hour, per month, whatever? It doesn't mean as much as we think it does because of cost of living differences between regions and whatnot. So it's almost like we should be referencing cost of living. What's the ratio to cost of living? But the reality is, are they making enough money to pay their bills? And again, it seems like we always have to have the caveat tossed out there that you can pay people a lot of money and they can always spend more. And I don't know what the level is, but most of us, I think, most reasonable people will know I get paid pretty darn well. I'm in financial straits because of me, not because I'm not being paid well, right? Not always. And I'm sure many of you listening to this about jumped out of your seat or hit the pause button because immediately you're thinking of employees or colleagues who don't think that way. But do they really make up the majority of people, you know? Maybe I'm just full of it and overly optimistic, but people have to be able to pay their bills. Okay. So that's also a major demotivator when they're being arguably underpaid and set up to fail to get paid well. That kind of goes hand in hand. But then assuming that's where it needs to be, then the next thing is, are you as a leader excited about what you do and showing interest in what they're doing and excitement for them? Again, am I saying you're just jumping up and down and setting off fireworks for every car that gets fixed right? That would be kind of cool, right? Just like a football game, they score a touchdown and the shop could have one of those. Can I patent that idea? Chris, Claudia, if you're listening to this, we got to talk. I think they have an idea. Anyways, that's taking interest and showing excitement, you know, just genuine excitement in their success and what they're doing and urging, cultivating that excitement from them. That when they're showing you what they're doing, whatever it may be, that they feel good about what they're doing so that they can sit there and have just that, yeah, that just giddy as a child, giddy as a kid, right? Maybe not Christmas giddy, but just, you know, when kids are happy to be doing something or looking forward to be doing something, even though they've done it time and time again every day, whatever that is, I don't know, jump on the trampoline, get on their bike, get to play with Legos, play a video game, watch whatever freaking movie for the thousandth time. Yeah. What can we do to just better perpetuate that? You know, it's not going to be 100%, but again, it's all about stacking odds, right? How do you stack the odds in your favor that this is the environment that will allow your employees or associates or colleagues to keep a little bit or a lot of that passion alive, a lot of that giddiness alive? And some people just, it will be natural. What they do is what they want to be doing, and they just savor every minute, or, you know, most of them. And others, they start out with it and then it slowly goes away. Some of it might be on them. Sometimes it's really not. Sometimes work sucks it right out of us. Not, and this is going to sound like a big dig, and maybe it is, kind of the way our school systems often suck the energy and sheer wonder and curiosity from our children. Are our shops laid out like a school? Yeah, where they come in ready and raring to go and excited to be fixing cars. And the first year or two they're working for you, they're, you know, you're walking over like, hey, what's going on? What are you working on today? And they're showing you with just a little bit of excitement. And then after a few more years, there's not any giddiness. It's apathy or just, yeah, genuine disdain. So yeah, just something to think about. I hope you enjoyed this. I know I get a kick out of just thinking about stuff. I wish I knew something, but it's fun to think about it. If you have any ideas for other stuff for me to think about or talk about, please don't hesitate to shoot me an email, mattfonslowpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to be a guest, you know, again, please fire off an email or find me on social media, send me a message. Happy to have you on. And just want to thank our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology, and also thank the Aftermarket Radio Network. Yeah, if you get a chance, scroll through the catalog offered by the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can scroll past Craig's. So Craig O'Neill's, scroll past that. Go to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest. That's a great one. Okay, I'm lying. Well, Hunt's is great. Business by the Numbers is great. Craig O'Neill's, his is quite good, as is the Walkers. I mean, they're all good. Yeah, they're all good. We need more time in the day to listen to them. That's what we need. Oh, I don't want to forget Chris Cotton. Saved the best for last. Even had the delay. So again, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.